Welcome to Your Space Journey, where we venture into the future of space exploration and the incredible leaders who are taking us there. Here's your host, Chuck Fields.
Hello, thank you so much for joining me today. This is April 2020, and exactly 50 years ago this month, the world witnessed the amazing story of Apollo 13. And it's my great honor to introduce my recent phone interview with astronaut Fred Hayes, who was a lunar module pilot for this amazing mission. Now, while Fred is perhaps best known for serving on the Apollo 13 mission, he was also very heavily involved on other Apollo missions, including serving as backup pilot for both Apollo 8 and Apollo 11. He was also backup commander for Apollo 16 and slated to be flight commander for the later canceled Apollo 19 mission. Fred was heavily involved in the initial space shuttle program, and in fact, he piloted the first test flight of the space shuttle Enterprise. Now, before we get to my interview with Fred, I'd like to ask for your support. If you can ring the bell if you're watching on YouTube, or if you're listening on your favorite podcast application, if you can give us a like and a comment there, we would certainly appreciate it. If you feel so inclined, we would love your support on patreon.com/yourspacejourney or patreon.com/onlinecoffeebreak. Either way, we really do appreciate your support. If you can share this episode with a friend, we'd appreciate that too. One other thing we'd love to have is, this being a space episode, we'd love to hear from you. We'd love to hear what motivates you for space, what you're excited about for the future of space exploration. And that, we're going to introduce my segment called Your Space Journey. And today I'm going to share a story of my friend, Jason Fields, no relation, but a good friend. Here's his story about what he's interested in for space.
Hi, I'm Jason Fields. I'm with Florida Is Sinking. It's a podcast based in Central Florida where we talk about all the crazy things in Florida and just life here in general. My space journey began when I was maybe 10 or 11 years old. My family, I grew up in Georgia. I live in Florida now, but my family was vacationing in Florida from Georgia, and we took a trip to the Kennedy Space Center. And this was probably in the early 90s. I think I was 10 or 11, you know, somewhere around in there. But I remember being on the bus tour and, you know, traveling about Kennedy Space Center, and we passed the Vehicle Assembly Building. And up until that point, you know, I was excited to be at Kennedy, you know, as much as a kid with like normal interests are. But when I saw that building, it absolutely blew my mind, and I couldn't believe that we built a building of that size and that rockets were assembled there. Like, it all kind of came together in that moment, and I decided that NASA was an amazing thing and that I was lucky to get to see that, and that, you know, we as normal citizens had access to go tour that and just see those sites, you know, see where history actually took place. You know, I'm most excited about this commercialization of our space program because I believe that gives NASA a little more leverage to do the things that it wants to do. And launching a human being from the U.S. again, to me, is exciting. You know, we haven't had a launch from a U.S. citizen launch from American soil since 2011 when Atlantis launched. And just to be able to start launching people here, I feel like we're supposed to be doing that. And to see that happen, you know, see it come into fruition now, it's exciting. I'm really excited about it.
Your space journey.
Thanks, Jason, for sharing your story. Folks, we'd love to hear from you. If you'd like to share your space journey with us, give us a call at 317-862-4700. If you'd like to pre-record an audio or video clip, just send that to us at info@yourspacejourney.com. Now let's recap the amazing story of Apollo 13. The Apollo 13 mission was launched from Kennedy Space Center on April 11, 1970. An explosion in one of the oxygen tanks 2 days into the mission prevented the three astronauts, Commander Jim Lovell, Command Module Pilot Jack Swigert, and Fred Hayes, from landing on the moon. For 4 harrowing days, the entire world awaited the safe return of the crew, who successfully splashed down and were recovered in the South Pacific on April 17, 1970. Now, I'm excited to introduce my phone interview with Fred Hayes. Again, this made my day, especially in this time and age. It's so nice to talk to who I consider a great American hero about this exciting event in our history. Now, as you may know, Fred actually served in the Marines, the Navy, and the Air Force. But before he started his military career, did you know that he actually was going to become a journalist? Here's Fred telling that story.
I was actually in line to become a journalist.
Really?
I got interested in the high school newspaper, sports editor, continued thinking that was my major, working for the Biloxi Gulfport Daily Herald in spare time. They'd give me peewee games and, you know, things like that to do.
Now, of course, Fred later decided to become a pilot. However, he had never actually flown before.
I'd never been in an airplane in my life. Had never been particularly interested in aviation. And of course, the time I'm talking about is late 1940s to early 1950s, so right. There was no space program. So I decided to join the service and serve my country, and went into flight training as a Navy cadet in the NAVCAD program at Pensacola. And before I could graduate, the Korean War had ended with an armistice about 6 months before I finished flight training. But I was commissioned as a Marine second lieutenant with Naval Aviator Wings and went off to my first squadron, VMF 533, flying Banshee jet aircraft, fighter bombers.
Fred had an amazing early career as a pilot, later becoming a research pilot. But what motivated him to become an astronaut? Well, in this next clip, Fred was explaining how he actually was able to talk with Neil Armstrong to find out what it was like to be an astronaut and why he decided to become an astronaut.
Well, that was a very hard choice, indecision to make, because by then, of course, Gemini program was in swing, and Apollo, of course, was in the background. That was going to happen, and people were going to go to the moon. I was thinking about that, and one time Neil came back and visited at Edwards at Flight Research Center, and Don Malik and I, another pilot, got a brief time set with Neil and asked him about what it was like being an astronaut down there in Houston. And his description, which turned out to be pretty true, was, we sit in a lot of meetings, we sit in a simulator a lot, and there's not much good flying. But the thought of getting a chance to go to the moon, which certainly I looked at would be a great adventure, was too hard to pass up. So I did apply in 1966, and I guess I applied actually in the fall of 65, and was chosen as one of the group of 19 in April of 1966, the original 19. We were named by John Young.
One thing that really amazed me is Fred's first assignment at NASA was to help test the LEM, the Lunar Excursion Module, which became so important later on in Apollo 13. Here's Fred telling about that assignment.
Things were so busy and there was so much ground to cover that they went into what they call support crew assignments to cover the waterfront. And Ed Mitchell and I were assigned to Jim McDivitt, who was scheduled to fly Apollo 8. At the time, it was Apollo 8, was going to be the first mission to fly the lunar module. It was kind of interesting. We went to Jim's office, sat down, and we talked a little while, and his really only guidance was a simple, almost one-sentence statement of it. He said, I want you and Ed to go to Grumman and make sure I got a good LEM to fly.
Nice.
And that was it.
Now, as I mentioned earlier, Fred was assigned as backup crew for Apollo 8 and Apollo 11, among other Apollo missions later on in the program. But here he is talking about what it meant to be on the backup crew.
Got trained to go fly Apollo 8 and as a backup to Bill Anders. And that was interesting, too. You know, Apollo 8 was originally Apollo 9.
Yes.
Because I mentioned McDivitt was going to fly 8. Mm-hmm. But the LEM did not get ready, so they flip-flopped those two missions. So in fact, when I was originally assigned as the backup to Apollo 8, when Mike Collins got a medical problem and left the crew assignment, Jim Lovell moved up from the backup crew to be the command module pilot on Apollo 9 at that time. And that opened a slot for me to become the backup lunar module pilot to Bill Anders. And I was in the backup crew with Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin. You trained equally to a prime crew.
Right.
You were prepared to go fly. And so you'd done all the hard work. except you got to watch somebody else go fly.
Now, before the flight of Apollo 13, as Fred explains, the mood was a little subdued. There was a last-minute switch of astronauts where Jack Swigert came in. But unlike the movie Apollo 13, Jack was extremely well-prepared for this mission. Here's Fred talking about that.
Well, I guess I'd say our launch period, right immediately leading up to launch, was a little bit subdued. I was, of course, excited that I was finally getting to fly. Mm-hmm. It was subdued because of the crew changeout, not the way, the way the movie portrayed it. There was big concern about Jack filling in for Ken, because the same things I just described, we knew Jack was trained to go fly the mission, right. Very capable of. Technically, he might have missed out on some of the last meetings with the photo guys who kept changing everything.
Yes.
For the photo plan. But that was about the only thing Jack might have sort of been behind Ken.
Now, again, what was fascinating to me is that Fred was a rookie for the flight of Apollo 13. Here he is talking about what he was expecting and what he experienced as a rookie on his first space flight.
Well, I've always described the two things different, struck me as being most different from my aircraft flying experience, was the views out the window. Even though we were at fairly low altitude, less, I think about 110 miles altitude or less, a little less. But of course, I'd been in airplanes, Zoom flights, I'd been to almost 90,000 feet in the 104. But 90,000 feet is not 100 and something miles, so it still was a different perspective. Yes. With sunrises and sunsets very quickly. We only went around a couple of times before heading out to the moon. So that was, and of course the sights at approaching and en route into the moon and approaching the moon and one circle around the backside, even those kind of looks out the window, time seemed, am I really here looking at what I'm looking at? The only other unusual thing was being able to float around, you know, in zero G, yourself or objects, that kind of thing. It's kind of a euphoric sensation. Otherwise, all the G levels, vibration, shake, rattle, and roll, all that launch and entry were less than I'd experienced in airplanes.
Now, the movie Apollo 13 also sort of jokes around about the cabin repress valve and how Fred would use this and sort of startled the astronauts. Now, Fred actually emphasized this was not for fun. It was just his style and his way of doing what the mission called for.
And the procedure, either setting up the vehicle or shutting down, there was a step you did that, and it would make a bang. And normally you would, I guess most people would tell the rest of the crew, I'm going to throw this valve and it's going to make a sound, sort of a bang.
Right.
And I often, in testing we did over the period, wouldn't bother telling them, so I'd give them a little surprise.
Now, on April 13th, 1970, 2 days into the Apollo 13 mission, there was an oxygen tank explosion on board. Here's Fred talking about that experience.
At the time this happened, I was still in the lunar module putting things back in storage where they belonged that we had pulled out for the TV show. And we kind of did a show-and-tell thing. And as soon as I could drift up through the tunnel and got to my right couch position, looking at the scan in the instrument panel, which, of course, had about 6 or 7 caution lights on, caution warning lights on, the master alarm, and the blue computer restart light, the gauges for the oxygen, cryogenics, oxygen, hydrogen, on oxygen tank tube, in 2 different meters, the needles were at the bottom of those gauges. Those were fed by different sensors. Unlikely multiple sensors fail at one time.
Right.
So it was almost for sure we had lost oxygen tank 2. And I was just sick to my stomach.
Yeah.
With disappointment, because I knew without reference and mission rules that this constituted an abort. And we had lost the, they'd probably even gone into lunar orbit, much less landing.
Right.
And all that work and 2 previous missions, and now here, a big chance, and landing on the moon and walking on the moon was gone in an instant. I did not think it was life-threatening. Tank 1 looked okay at the time. So we kept everything fully powered up and just come home ASAP.
Now, of course, the astronauts weren't able to land on the moon, but they did get to go around the moon. Here's Fred talking about that amazing experience of looking down at the moon and what he felt and saw at that time.
Well, it was obviously an incredible sight to see it up close. When I say up close, we were a little over 130 miles above it. At the max height as we went around, to see this lifeless, beat-up rock is a way with different shades from dark to almost a white light color of gray. And, of course, the moon has no atmosphere. It has no visible water. And it's just compared to the beautiful Earth, you could see way far away, where you still had color. It was colorized. It still had blues of oceans, appearances, browns of continents, and you could even see cloud patterns. The moon was obviously quite bizarre compared to the Earth. It was clear it would not likely be a very habitable place for us humans.
Now, since Fred had been so heavily involved in the testing of the LEM, he had a lot of confidence in it, which really was necessary because as they shut systems down, there was a concern for safety and the survival of the crew for the mission. Here's Fred talking about that.
I had a lot of confidence in the LEM because, I'd been so involved. Of course, there was always a concern when you use a vehicle not quite like it was planned to be used, because we had the power down severely to make sure the six batteries, that was the primary power for the landing craft, that it would now make it for 4 days rather than its planned two-day lifetime. Mm-hmm. And the vehicle did get very chilly. Secondary concern, though, was the water separator at that lower temperature was not functioning properly, and so it was not getting rid of the moisture from our breathing the moist air out each breath, and water was building up that we could see in the limb because it has no inner wall. Mm-hmm. It has netting material. We couldn't afford the weight of a wall. And you can see through the netting at the wiring bundles and the connectors and plumbing lines. And water globules had really were building up at every turn of a wiring bundle at the connector interfaces or turn in the plumbing. So that was concern about electric shorts. And, of course, that same thing was in the command module when Jack and I got in to power it up 2.5 hours before entry. That's when they gave us the go-ahead to start the power up. Jack had got out towels to wipe off the instrument panel, which was covered with water. And so same thing we worried about. It turns out what precluded that was the goodness of a tragedy and an accident of the Apollo 1 fire. After any accident, aircraft accident, or in that case, spacecraft, you have an accident board and they go through all the causal effects and, of course, present what you should do different to preclude that happening again. And of course, the big thing people know about is they redesigned the hatch so it would open outward. His crew was trapped in there during that time, a whole new hatch design, and a number of other things. But one that saved us was a very much stricter criteria on wiring. That had to be ties every so many inches along a wire bundle, hold it tightly together. That anyway, you had a clamp, it had to be perfectly round and not egg-shaped hole in the wiring. And most importantly, hermetically sealed the connectors with a thicker material called Melcor, where the wiring went into connector, like 48-pin connectors or whatever size. That sealing made them waterproof.
Oh, really?
So that's what precluded us, even though we had all this abundance of water everywhere and behind panels and on all the wiring, we never got an electric short.
Now, 50 years later, I was amazed at how Fred seems to remember this story so well. Obviously, it's really ingrained in his memory. Here's Fred talking about that.
I've retold the story lots of times. That's kept it kind of fresh in my mind, which in some respects makes it seem not that long ago. Of course, if I look at a calendar, it's very clear. And with my strength and walking ability, running ability, or whatever, yes, I know it's been a long time.
Now, as I mentioned, after Apollo, Fred went on to help with the space shuttle program and was the first pilot of the Space Shuttle Enterprise. Here's Fred talking about that experience.
Then I was involved through the whole design development of the orbiter at Rockwell. Then I got the pleasure of going back to the astronaut office when I was named to be the commander of Crew 1 of the two crews that would get to fly Enterprise. So it was kind of a womb-to-tomb episode where I was there from day one of the development through getting to fly the first flight.
Now, of course, Fred has seen the initial space program all the way through current days of SpaceX and their reusable rockets. So I asked him, what is he excited about? What does he think about the future of space exploration? Here's Fred talking about that.
I'd like to see continued exploration in any vein we can do it, unmanned and manned, because I'm kind of interested in the future of the human race. I'm interested in what is this all about? I mean, this big universe we're in, you know, all aspects in that regard. I think the Creator would have wanted us to use to the best we can in affordability that the talent we've been blessed with. We're uniquely, at least, the only creatures we know. Of course, we don't know that much outward in the universe, but at least on Earth, we're the only creatures that have ever evolved that can do it. There's no other creature, even though they say dolphins are smart, and they're not going to build a starship. And so we should be using our talent in that direction. So I think it's a goodness thing.
Your space journey.
Wow, I really enjoyed my conversation with Fred today. Hope you did too. Fred actually is very actively involved as a board of director for the Infinity Science Center. So if you'd like to learn more about them, just go to their website at visitinfinity.com. I want to thank Fred for taking time for my phone call. I want to thank you for taking time to join us today. Really do appreciate it. Again, if you'd like to share this episode with a friend, we would certainly love that. Thank you again for taking time to join us today. We'll see you next time. God bless.